Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by this morning. I want to apologize again about yesterday. All I can say is that this is the world of high technology, and I am limited on what my abilities are. I don't think my inability had anything to do with yesterday, but sometimes I have to assume that if I were just a little bit more technical savvy, I could fix some of the things that happen with Blog Talk Radio. For those of you who don't understand how this takes place, this is not a radio station. This is Blog Talk Radio. So you get on the internet. I joined Blog Talk Radio almost 2 years ago. And I make the schedule, and the shows automatically come up on my dashboard when I get into my dashboard in the morning. And it always tells me, that everything is, happening the way I assumed it was going to happen yesterday. It said there was no show for yesterday morning. And because most of the techs are based in places like California, the time zone is different. So there's seldom anyone that I can actually speak to, talk to. I can leave messages, I can leave emails, but I usually don't hear back from anybody until later in the day. And they called me yesterday, and I hope everything is good to go. I did check my schedule, and I'm good until after the end of this year with my set schedule. So, again, I apologize. Today's normally would have been Bullies to Buddies Day, but I think it's still appropriate to discuss the show that I had planned for yesterday. It's kind of a cute story that my son David sent to me. It's about a NFL star, J.J. Watt. I know nothing about him. I have seen him on some commercials on TV, so I was aware of him. And I really don't, from the video that was shared with me, I didn't really understand how he found out about this young man. I'm just glad that he did. And it's a very, very lighthearted. It's not real dramatized or anything. This young boy tells you about himself, and you immediately see the issues that would bring on comments from the rest of the boys or girls in the class. He has, he's very tiny, very thin, somewhat gangly. I have a grandson that we all, of course, he's quite grown into himself now. He's a senior, and he's the one who went in the Army. So he's built himself up, but there was a time when we all kidded him because he just, the left foot went right and the right foot went left, and he just was, he just was like a big spider monkey. And we all good-naturedly kidded him. So he learned kind of gently and lovingly to deal with the things that other kids might pick on him about. And it worked for him. I don't know that that's the answer for every kid, because some kids, picking on him a little bit exacerbates the problem. But this young man was quite articulate and talked about how people picked on him, and all he ever wanted to do was play football. But he was so small. As a mom, I would have been worried about him because I'd have been afraid he was going to get hurt. And he has his face hasn't grown into the rest of his features. He has very large teeth. They don't appear to be They protrude a little bit, but they don't appear to be terrible once he grows into them, kind of, so to speak. Like some kids, their ears look enormous until they get to be bigger, and they kind of grow into those things. So anyway, JJ meets up with him in a restaurant. This is after he's told his story, and JJ takes him for a ride and takes him to a YMCA. And the beautiful part about this is that he's welcomed by a bunch of other kids who belong to the YMCA. And they all play football together. And J.J. Watt plays football with them. And this young man, his name is Billy. Very, the kind of kid that most of us grandmas and moms would like, because he could talk and he could express himself. He was cute. So the moral to this story is what I really want to talk about today. And I did get some feedback on Facebook yesterday in regard to it. So I'd like to talk about that too. But first I want to bring in Shell. Good morning, honey. How are you?
Good morning, Reen. Glad to be back.
Yeah, me too. It was an interesting day fighting with all of that all day yesterday, but I think sometimes on the internet things just that you think are set in stone disappear and other things pop up when you don't want them to be there anymore. So it is what it is. So I apologized to everyone this morning, and of course on Facebook, because that's where most of my followers come to say what happened or talk to me about everything. So I did post this this article that David sent to me, and a lot of people had feedback on it. You and I, on several occasions on the Buddies, on the Bullies to Buddies show, have talked about the worth for a kid that's being picked on to be secure enough so that he doesn't take to heart some of the things that get said to them. We've also talked about at length the fact that things that are obviously true are more hurtful than the things that you can slough off because you know in your own heart they're not true. We've talked
right.
about all those things at length.
Right.
And I think you and I agree that the most important thing that we can give to a kid who is very likely to have some struggles because of physical stuff, being too tall, being too short, being too skinny, being too fat, being too having a big nose, having grandpa's ears when you've only got the frame of a 10-year-old, all those kind of things, which has happened to all of us in one way or another, learning to socially adapt so that they're not so insecure, so that they don't give any credence to the things that are said to them. And the feedback I got yesterday was interesting. I had some people say to me that kids are just mean, and you can't expect a kid to think like an adult. And I thought to myself, well, I don't expect them to think like an adult, and I agree with that. But I still think that it's the adult's place to share some of those things, so you plant the seed until it grows into a realization for that child. How do you feel about that? If you say something to a kid that you know is a little bit over their head, how do you feel they're gonna I don't know, understand it eventually?
Well, yes, of course. The whole thing is that when people say things like, you know, kids are kids and you can't expect them to act like adults, I think that's a cop out because kids are very intelligent. No, they're not going to be able to pick up a chemistry book and understand what they're reading, but they can understand concepts, they can understand morality, they can understand human nature at very, very young age. I mean, I have conversations with my 5-year-old great-nephew, and you know, because sometimes he gets a little full of himself or this and that, and it literally takes a minute to redirect him. He's a good kid. He's a good-hearted kid, but he's a kid. He's 5 years old. You know, he's growing. He's maturing. Sometimes the world revolves around him, and sometimes at 5 years old, he's extremely insightful and aware that somebody around him is not okay, and all of a sudden it's not about his little five-year-old world anymore. Now he's concerned about somebody else, you know, and I recognize this in him already. You know, I've seen it in my other nieces and nephews. So I think teasing is healthy as long as you don't get cruel. I've seen kids tease each other, and I've seen adults tease children in a way that I thought wasn't cool. I thought it was going too far. It was demoralizing them. But just to tease somebody lightheartedly, to make them laugh at themselves, but genuinely laugh at themselves, not do it out of embarrassment, but do it out of like, oh, big deal. You know, this thing is what I have, or, you know, like I'm going to stage, or maybe it's something permanent, maybe it's something they'll always have, you know, but you make light of it in a loving way, you know. I'm merciless with my nieces and nephews. I tease them all the time, and that's one of the things that bonds us, because they tease back, but they tease back in a loving way, and we just have fun with each other, and it makes you, when you can laugh at yourself, when you can be light about yourself and about your foibles, which everybody has, it just makes life more fun when you don't take things so serious. So I think teasing is one of the things that matures people. And when you, because sometimes if I'll take Cody again, for instance, if he's in a bad mood and you try to tease him, then he acts like he's mad at you, you know. And I'll look at him and I'll say, you know, I love you and I'm always teasing you. The only reason you're getting mad at me is because you're upset about something else. What's wrong? What are you upset about? You know, and I let him know that if you react like that, it's not appropriate, you know. So there's got to be something else going on, because I tease you all the time. I'm not being mean. So if you got upset at that, something else going on. What's going on with you? You know, but I pay attention to his moods. You can't tease a child and hurt their feelings. And if you do hurt their feelings, you have, as far as I'm concerned as a result, you have two responsibilities. Number one, teach them not to get overly hurt over good-natured teasing. They shouldn't tolerate people being cruel to them, you know, and that's something as they get older they'll learn the difference between, okay? And then the second thing is that if, in fact, they are acting like something is wrong, maybe something is, and it has nothing to do with you teasing them.
Right.
You have an opportunity there to find out what's going on with this child. So that's my take on that. But I think good-natured teasing is what helps people mature and what helps people, so to speak, get over themselves and just be a little bit easier with life.
Well, one of the things that was said to me yesterday was that there's been a lot of studies about kids and how they're all about me, and they really don't, you know, they don't put themselves in someone else's shoes ever, and they don't do this and they don't do that. And I said, well, that's where we come in. That's where our job begins. Because you're right. If you think about the life of a child in a good family, in a loving family, they are sheltered when they're a baby. They're held when they have good mommies and daddies and aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas. They're held a lot. They're babied because they're babies. They fuss and somebody pays attention to them right away. They have a wet diaper on and they cry or they squirm all around in your lap and you know something's wrong, so you check it. They come into this world helpless. And I wish it was true in all families that all babies got the kind of attention that they're supposed to have when they're at that helpless stage. We know from all the shows we've done that that's not true. But in the perfect world, that baby is taught that they are the the center of that family's universe during that time. So you're right. It is hard for them to step from that being the all-important baby to being a toddler who has to now start learning lessons and being taught to be careful, to not touch that electric wire. Do not touch the light bulb. It's hot. Do not run towards the street. There's cars. There's a million things that you teach them. Don't put all your toys in your mouth. Remember, when they're teething, you give them toys to put in their mouth, right?
Yeah, they put everything in there.
And then you get to the point where, you know, you're trying to teach them something different. So let's open up the dialogue a little bit like that. You have been with all your nieces and nephews pretty much now when they were babies. You see the difference between when they get everything from us and when they don't?
Oh, yeah, of course. And I've also seen the transition, mainly with the kids here in Florida, obviously. The two guys in Germany, I only get to see them a couple weeks a year. But even with them, I see some normal, you know, sibling rivalry a little bit. But I also see how much they absolutely love each other, you know. And it's just healthy, and they love teasing each other, and they've got good senses of humor, you know. And then the kids here in Florida, you know, there's a big age difference, because Cheyenne, I think, was, so what is she now, 11? So she was already 6 when Cody was born, you know. So it was different. Cody and they are only 2 years apart. So there's a 3 years apart, I'm sorry. So when Cody was born, Shy was already old enough to be willing to relinquish a little bit of attention. You know, even though a six-year-old still wants a lot of attention, it was easier to reason with her. And she was really good with Cody, you know. Cody, still pretty baby. You know, he was only 3 when Bay was born. And 3 years old, they're still pretty much, you know, in needing of your attention. So what my niece did and what we all did is that we made him participate with everything we did with Bay. If we were doing something with Bay, we asked Cody's help. And he's grown into a very caring older brother, and Bay absolutely adores him. Whenever we go anywhere, I have some pictures of it. It like tugs at my heart. She always has to hold his hand. You know, like we're going somewhere, and she wants to know where Cody is, because she has to grab his hand and she wants to hold his hand, because she's used to him being this protective older brother. And she absolutely adores her older sister, Cheyenne. If Shy walks into the room, they will actually scream, "Shy, Shy," like it's her, you know, long-lost friend that she hasn't seen in weeks. And Shy absolutely, you can see that gets to her. She loves how this little girl loves her. So it was a good thing, and I see this not happen sometimes in families, where all of a sudden the baby becomes the focus and the other kids are not included in a way that makes them feel all right about it. But what way my niece did it and the way we did it was we included the other kids so that they wouldn't feel that they were being ignored or that they weren't important anymore. And, you know, that's a distinction. But we are a family of lightheartedness. We don't take ourselves seriously. We have all had times in our lives where we did and where we became ornery or irritable. But because of the people we are, it never lasted with us. We would recognize it over time, or somebody would say something like, "Hey, what's wrong with you? Snap out of it. Come on. You know, you're bringing everybody down. What's going on?" You know, unless there was something serious going on, and then we all dealt with it as best as we could. You know, but if it seemed to be nothing causing this irritability or whatever, we would kind of like try to make the person lighten up and, you know, or just leave them alone. Sometimes people just need space to get out of their own way, especially the kids. My niece Cheyenne is at that age now where sometimes she's just off because she's going into her teenage years, and sometimes their hormones are messing with them, and sometimes they feel this way or that way for no reason. And when she gets like that, Dawn will try to, that's her mom, my niece, and then Cheyenne is my great niece, Dawn's daughter. When Cheyenne gets like that, sometimes Dawn will try to talk to her, And if she keeps saying, you know, she doesn't want to talk, Dawn will say, fine, she said, and then she'll tell everybody, leave Cheyenne alone, she'll get over this on her own. And she tells me, she said, if you want to talk, Cheyenne, you and I can go somewhere by ourselves. She says, but, you know, she said, if you're going to be in a bad mood, don't take it out on anybody else. If you need to talk, I'm here for you, you know. Otherwise, just, you know, she said, or if you want to go for a walk with me, she said, we can walk and talk. She said, otherwise, you know, because sometimes she'll get a little, like, irritable with the rest of the family. And when Dawn does that, she's fine. I mean, literally 5 minutes later, she's okay. So whatever it is, she works out in her head. But I've seen some parents force the child, you know, what's going on, what's wrong, and they, like, force them to talk. Let them know you're willing to talk to them, but don't force them to talk, you know. And kids are very resilient. They'll either come around on their own or they will eventually talk to you, you know. So I've just seen some of this with my own kids, you know, with my own nieces and nephews. They have great capacity to learn. They have great capacity for compassion, even at 5 years old. Even in Bailey, I've seen it. If she sees a boo-boo on you, she's like, all like, I had a scratch on my arm the other day when I saw her. Well, she was all upset about that. She kept picking my shirt sleeve up and patting the scratch and, like, doing a frowny face at me and going, boo-boo, boo-boo. And I was like, it doesn't hurt, babe. I'm okay. But that, like, concerned her, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So even at a very young mm-hmm. age, you can see concern and compassion in kids. So I think it is something that can be worked with. I think kids can be taught how to not tease each other in a cruel way, because I've seen them get there. I've seen Cody be, like, really nasty to Shy, or Shy be nasty to Cody. But it's just because they're getting a little carried away with the teasing, or they're carried away because they're kids. They don't, you know, they don't have that shut-off valve yet. So as a parent or an aunt like me, I'll go up and I'll say, Cody, that's not cool. You went too far. Or Cheyenne, he's only 5 years old, you know. You're twice his age. He doesn't think this is funny anymore. You're older than him. You need to start recognizing when you got to stop, you know. And she does,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
She takes,
mm-hmm.
learns, and she gets better. So, but we do have to guide them on how to not be cruel, what's okay and what's not okay. And just because it may be their basic nature to go too far, it doesn't mean you just let it happen without any instruction. We're there to teach them.
Well, what about the fact that, for me, it was always very easy to say, you know, if I said this to you, would it hurt your feelings? Yes. And would you say it to somebody else? And they always look, especially when they're real, like five-ish. Because once they get in kindergarten, if they don't have some of those understandings about what you say to somebody else, I mean, because it's nothing for a little kid between the ages of 3 and 5 that is precociously speaking and talking and has opinions and everything, which I love little kids like that. But for them to be in a surrounding and have an old person walk up to them and pick them up and talk to them and say, ooh, you got bad breath. Okay, now, and,
right.
you know, everybody in the room kind of smiles and is embarrassed with the older person and kind of looks at the child and maybe later chastises the child. But it was the truth. The person does have bad breath. So how do you explain to that child, yes, we don't want you to say things that aren't true. Yes, we appreciate that you said something that was true, but it hurt the feelings of grandma or grandpa or Aunt Lucy or whoever it was. Do you want to hurt their feelings? No. Well, then, you know, you shouldn't say that. Or if you really think it's something that you should have a say in, then you do it privately. Just like when you get in trouble, I don't spank you in front of all the other kids or punish you in front of all the other kids because they're going to pick on you, aren't they? Yes, I don't like it when they all make fun of me because I got in trouble. Okay, so we go in the other room and we talk about what you did wrong. It's the same thing if you're going to say something to somebody who might, you know, have their feelings hurt. it's okay to be, you know, honest and even say things sometimes like that because you're doing somebody a favor at the end of the day, but not out loud so everybody else can hear you because it's embarrassing. So understanding embarrassment, surprisingly, is very easy for a five-year-old because they get embarrassed easy. Mm-hmm. They don't know that's mm-hmm. what it is until you explain it to them. But when you explain it to them, everyone I've ever dealt with gets it right away.
Right, right.
You know? So the consensus yesterday was that, and some of Izzy's stuff talks about this too, and I think there is a fine line between being able to educate a child with things that they're ready to process and knowing the difference between what they can process and what they can't. Sex. Remember last week when we talked about sex education?
Right.
And you have to be careful with that. But you do have to talk about it. And if you need mm-hmm. help talking about it, there's plenty of books, there's plenty of resources out there for you to get help with it. But it's the same with every lesson you teach a child. So this, what was so beautiful about this was this little boy, he was 12. And his speech was even just the tiniest bit strange that a kid would pick up on, absolutely, positively, because of his teeth. And I have a great-granddaughter who was born with too many teeth, and her very front teeth protrude because she's got teeth behind them. A lot of kids, that happens to a lot of kids. They have more teeth than what their little mouths can handle. So she gets picked on quite a bit about her teeth. And my sister Barbara, when she was a little girl, her teeth were too big for her little itty-bitty tiny face. And I would sing Bucky, Bucky Beaver to her in my nice sisterly fashion to make fun of her. So... But eventually, you have to talk with that child and say, yes, your teeth are big, but the rest of you is going to grow into those teeth, and you'll be beautiful. Keep your teeth clean, take care of them, and you will have this beautiful, beautiful smile. There's a way to get them to not be so embarrassed by the attention brought to something that they see with their own two eyes is not like everybody else's.
Right. And see, what you just said there is a key factor. And this is one of the things that I see missing. When you tease a child or you tease someone, it has to be in two parts. You can't just tease them relentlessly or in a way that's unkind or cruel and then never have that moment where you say, you know, I'm only teasing you, or, you know, I love you, or, you know, that I think you're beautiful, and I'm just trying to lighten you up, to reassure them that you don't really think this bad thing of them, that it is just to laugh with them, to get them not to be so serious about themselves. Because I've seen people that do just that, like you and me, and you see the kid being nurtured by that. It actually bolsters their self-esteem, and it does make them not feel so serious about themselves. It does make them more lighthearted. But when you have somebody that just teases without then saying anything kind or reassuring or loving, and all they get is teasing, that's what then sometimes tears down their self-esteem. And they go into victim mode, and they become embarrassed, and they're afraid of letting the person know they're hurting their feelings because maybe it's their favorite aunt, or it's one of their cousins, or it's somebody from school that they like. So they're embarrassed to let them know what's bothering them, but it's bothering them because all they get is teasing from this person. There has to be a balance. You know, I'm always telling my nieces and nephews how proud I am of them, how much I love them, you know. I see them. We're a very demonstrative family. So we're hugging each other, you know, that kind of thing. And you know, and I always let them know what I think of them, but I'm also a merciless teaser. But, you know, I'll tease them about one thing, you know, pinch them in the arm or something, and then the next minute I'm telling them how much I love them and how, you know, and, how special I think they are, you know. So they never get one without the other, you know, and I'm not putting them up on a pedestal and making them feel that they're pressured and performing for me, you know, because then I lighten it up by I'm teasing them in the next breath. So there's a nice balance in the emotions, and our whole family's like that with each other. So it's very warm, you know, like it's just we have fun with each other. And because of that, it's lighthearted. And so we really enjoy each other's company. And I think that's essential. What you just said is if you're going to be teasing them, which is good, and I think people should tease each other because I think it lightens them up, but you also have to reassure them. You can't just be a clown around them and never give them that flip side where you know you think well of them, where you're proud of them or you
mm-hmm.
love them or something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that there's great power and strength in knowing how to take a joke, hands down. Great power
Absolutely.
And strength in knowing how to handle and accept a joke, especially if you are the brunt of the joke. again, mean things are not okay, but good-natured kidding, picking is a sign of affection in most families. So I guess understanding that. So let's take this boy, Billy.
So I missed my time clock over here must have been off by a minute or two because when I called in, you were already talking.
Mm-hmm.
So I missed what the point of what you started with. What is the story behind this boy that we're talking about?
Billy is 12, and his dream was to play football. So he went out for the football team, and the other players.
Rainey?
Yes?
I'm hearing a echo. When we talk, I'm hearing what we're saying echoing in the background. Do you hear that?
No. No, as a matter of fact, for a change, I have a really good connection this morning. Maybe you're on your house phone and I'm on my house phone. I don't know why that's happening to you. Mine is great this morning.
Okay.
So Billy goes out for the football. They tell him he's too skinny, too little. He'd get hurt playing football. And it doesn't explain how J.J. Watt found out about this. Maybe this was something that J.J. did to maybe he's one of those kind of superstars, NFL players and stuff that takes an interest in kids and, Alonzo Mourning. And there's several of our athletes that know that their fan club exists often of young people. So they are they're very observant of what's going on. And most of them are against bullying. I read those stories all the time. But at any rate, he shows up into this boy's life and walks in and sits down with him while the kid's sitting in a, I don't know, looks like a Burger King or something. And he said, hey. And he says, oh, my God, you know, you're J.J. Watt. And he goes, yeah. He says, I hear you want to play football. And he goes, yeah, but they won't let me because I'm too little. I'm too skinny and all this kind of stuff. And he said, well, he says, I got a surprise for you. We're going to go someplace. So they get in the car and they're talking and he's, you know, kind of bonding with Billy. And Billy's very honest. He says sometimes he sits in study hall all day because this one kid that is relentless with him is in every single class except one. He says, I go to that class, but for all the other classes, I go to study hall and just sit there and read my books and study. And JJ said, well, that doesn't seem like it's very good for you. And Billy said, it's okay. You know, that way I can just avoid him. And he says, what's his problem with you? He just says, you know, I'm funny looking, and they make fun of my teeth, the way I talk. They make fun of the way I walk, all these kind of things. So he takes him to a YMCA. And I grew up utilizing a YMCA, not a YWCA. In Ithaca, they only had a YMCA. And that's where I took swimming lessons and things like that. Even though I knew how to swim, I went there to pass all the tests so that I could swim in the areas in Ithaca where you couldn't swim unless you couldn't swim by yourself, unless you could swim across and you could deal with the waterfalls and stuff like that. They have some strict rules about that because of all the drownings way back in the day in all the fresh water places that there are to swim in a place like Ithaca. So at any rate, yeah, that's kind of cool thing. We'll have to talk about that someday too. But so he shares all this with them, takes them to the YMCA, and he meets kids all different ages, all different sizes. Little guys, bigger guys, guys that look like they're too big to play football because they've got other issues, weight issues, kind of cumbersome, lumbersome kind of young people. But they all played football together, and J.J. Watt played with them. And they couldn't believe how good Billy could throw a football. Billy caught the football, and yes, he was very gangly looking, and some people could kid him about the way he runs, but he could play football. So what it did for him was give him some pride in what he could do and what he did do, and it no longer gave any truth or validity. Because he believed that they were right. That's why it hurt him so bad.
Right.
He believed that what they were saying was true. He does have big teeth. He has a mirror. He can see that his teeth don't fit his face like other kids' teeth fit their face. He could see that he's skinny and scrawny. So it was too honest and hurt his feelings. And because there wasn't anything he could do about it, you know, and we've talked about that a million times. You can tell me, a lot of things about me that I will laugh off. But if you start, calling me fatso, you hurt my feelings because it's true. And that's what hurts more than anything. So he gave him some strength and gave him some power in believing in himself. And it made all the difference in the world and in this child's behavior. It was a great, great story. But like I said, when I talked about it with some of the other people and I put stuff on Facebook, I got that kind of feedback that that you can't make a kid understand that because they're just a kid.
See, I don't agree with that.
I was like, geez, I understand where you're coming from, and I get that some kids are harder to get through to than others. So are some adults, quite frankly. They said, kids are mean, and I said, I know mean kids that are in their 60s. And sometimes it doesn't have anything to do with how old they are. It has a lot to do with the grown-ups in their lives. And I'm not one of those people who thinks, everything is mom and dad's fault, because I don't think that. But I do think that our leadership qualities, and we've talked about this a million times, suck. if your kid, the story of being on the phone with your best friend and getting off the phone and saying, good God, she drives me nuts. I don't know why she tells me all this stuff. And you complain about her, and then your five-year-old says, Mommy, I thought she was your best friend. Well, she is. Well, now you just sent a very confusing bit of information to that five-year-old, didn't you? A very confusing bit of information.
Of course.
So an explanation is called for there. I do love Renee. She's my best friend, but sometimes she just drives me a little bit to distraction, and that doesn't mean, you know, I get mad at Daddy, too. That doesn't mean I don't love him. I get mad at you. It doesn't mean I don't love you. Explanations go a long way in seeing a kid through something that they've witnessed or something that they've heard so that they understand how to deal with the information that they just learned, right?
Right, and the whole thing is that it can make us better people if we take the time to do this for them, because then it starts making us more self-aware about our own behavior. So if you if you realize that you're doing things that aren't really consistent with each other, you know, you have this person you love and then you're saying unkind things behind their back and you get called out on it by a child, you know, a lot of people, some people that I know won't explain anything to the child. You know, they just kind of like shrug it off. But in my particular case, I listen to the things my nieces and nephews say, even little five-year-old Cody, you know, because it's like they're really, really insightful. They are information processors. They're learning life right now. So they see things you don't see. They are aware of everything going on. They hear it all. They see it all. They're much more observant than you and I because they don't have as much stuff up there distracting them. You know, as an adult, you're looking at something and you're thinking of 20 other things. You're thinking about the bills you have to pay and what time you have to get up for work and did you remember to change the oil on the car? And, you know, you're going through a checklist in your mind at any given time during the day. A kid isn't. A kid is just completely open, taking in, like information overload. They're just sucking it in all day long. So a lot of times, younger kids will see things that as an adult are right in front of you and you didn't even see it was there. So I love being attentive to my nieces and nephews because I've learned from them, you know, and I feel it's my responsibility to be self-aware around them because it's helping me to kind of be more aware of what I say and being more consistent person. They're helping me with that. You know, although I'm pretty much there on my own anyway, I notice that they make me go even more there because I have to really watch myself around them because they pick up on everything. And if I say something and it does come out sounding mean or sounding cruel and they react to that, I have to instantly explain it to them, you know, and I do. And I think that this is the way that it should be. This is how kids it should be a two-way street when you have children, because by the time you become an adult and you become a parent, you're still not a done person. You should be growing and maturing for the rest of your life. It never stops. You're not mature at 40. You're not mature mature throughout your life. You should never get to a point where you stop learning and stop growing as a person. There's never a time when you're done. I don't believe in that. And I think that people that are constantly expanding themselves have happier and better lives. And I think children are it's a great cycle there because while you're teaching them, they're teaching you if you're open to it. And it's better
That's
for
right.
both the children and you.
But I couldn't agree with that more.
How many adults see that are like, they think they're done, they're baked, and they just throw information at the kid, and they never take anything going in the other direction? And I think that they're doing not only a disservice to the kid in that regard, but to themselves, because they're throwing away a chance to improve their own attitude as they get older and allow this child to teach them how to look at life differently again. I think it's very refreshing life.
Yes. I'm just going to say it's a fresh point of view, and it's silly to not pay attention to those things. It's really, really silly. And like you said, you're never done until you're dead. You're really never done. There's something you can learn every day, and sometimes it's about yourself. And who would have thought that? Who would have thought that when you're my age that somebody could tell you something about yourself that you didn't know? But they can.
Exactly.
They really can. So
yep.
I think that these stories, and I think the opportunity that the adults in the world have to be able to make a difference in a young kid's life like this is incredibly important. And if you do have that chance, and if you do get the opportunity to share with a kid about your own experiences, and let them know that, I mean, everything we're saying today, I'm put in mind of the day that we talked about sex education, because that's like the, you know, it's like taboo, you know. You have set things that you say about sex to a child, and sometimes you got a kid that's really on top of their game and looks at you, and you can almost hear him thinking, you know, God, is, you know, is that all you know about this? Because I know more about this than you do. You can almost hear him thinking that. So babying them about certain things that are important to the rest of their life is a mistake. And I do think that sometimes they don't understand everything you're saying, but then it's your job to say it again in a different way if you have to get them to understand. And, I mean, the conversations that I have with young people, which have been plentiful my whole life, I'm sure there have been some where they've walked away and the kid has thought to themselves, what the hell was she talking about? I'm sure there was those. but I still think it's important to, you know, to make that endeavor, to try to connect with your child or the children in your life, because every adult is a book to a child. They don't know that, but you should know that. And the only way they're going to read the book is if you open up and talk to them. And
yeah, I love psychology.
Yeah, I mean, we've all got something. No matter who we are, we've all got something to offer to a young person, always. And I just think it's important for us to be there and to say these things. Now, for those of you who get on Facebook, I still have that on my homepage. If somebody wants to see it, I'll repost it again today, share it again today, so that it's on my homepage, so that people can look at it, because it's cute. It's short, but it's cute. And this young man, J.J. Watt, is a friendly guy, and he also tells Billy that he's very muscular. He looks like a football player. He's not really big, but when he sits down next to Billy, you can see, you know, how well built he is. And he says, they told me I wasn't going to be able to play football either because I was too skinny. And Billy said, really? And he said, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He said, but we all grow, Billy, and you'll grow too. Now, that's a simple sentence right there. Imagine being so worried when you're 12 years old that you're always going to be skinny and scrawny, and everybody knows you're going to grow, but they don't ever say it to you.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And what's helpful with a kid like that is to, whenever you have a child, whether it be they're too short, too tall, too this, too that, you know, whatever, it would behoove you to find a celebrity or a sports figure or a successful, honest politician, and there are some out there, that was like that when they were a child, and now look what they've done with their lives, because there are so many of them out there. You have all these websites out there that show, you know, child photos of actors and actresses, and they just look goofy when they were younger, you know, because it's just like everybody else. Every kid. I mean, I see some of my teenage pictures. I was like freaking gangly at one point. I was like, oh my God, I forgot I ever looked like that. You look disproportionate at one point when you're growing up. Everybody goes through that, you know. But then you see these actors and actresses that are leading men and leading women, and they're gorgeous, you know, they're beautiful, they're handsome, you know, or they're successful, you know. Muscular athletes, and then you see a picture of this guy when he was 12 years old, and you look like you could knock him over with a feather, you know? And so, and there's so many of these articles out there. You could Google it, you know, before and after pictures or child, you know, child pictures of famous people, and show that to the kids. Show them that, look, you're still growing. You can grow into anything you want. You know, you want to be tall and slender. You want to be muscular. You want to be this. You want to be that. You know, you shape your body by what you choose to do. If you want to be a bodybuilder, start working out with weights, you know, when you get a little bit older, when your body can handle it. But what you are now doesn't mean what you're going to be even in 2 years, let alone 10 years when you're in your 20s, you know. So let your body, let yourself be a kid. My parents used to say, well, not my parents, my mother. She used to say when we were kids, she said, be a kid now. Because she says as you get older, she says things are going to change. What you want to do with life may change. So she said, go ahead and think big. You know, think what you want to do with your life now. And she says, but she said, you don't have to make the decision now. And she says, and if you make a decision, I thought this was brilliant. She said, if you make a decision and you start doing something and you realize when you're an adult that it's not what you like doing, she said, then try something different. You know, my mom was great at, like, taking pressure off of you. You know, mm-hmm. not make you feel like once you made a decision, you were locked in. And, you know, she's much harder on herself. She had enough instinct to teach my sister and I differently than she was taught, because my mom was actually taught in a way that gave her some emotional hang-ups and very, very serious about life and things like that. And she had enough sensitivity to teach my sister and I differently than she was taught, but she was never able to apply it to herself. So, you know, I appreciate that she recognized that she didn't like how stiff she was raised, and used a different technique with my sister and I. So I always appreciated that. But, but I thought that's a great thing. You have got to let these kids know that just because they're gangly now or they're short or they have acne, you know, that can change in 6 months. That can be radically different in a couple of years where they're not even going to recognize themselves anymore, and they can really make their future whatever they want to make it.
Mhm. Well, and I think the big word for that is what we try to give to people every day that are floundering in one way or another, and that's hope. I always felt that of all the things that we did for people at the Institute, that was first and foremost and hands down the most important thing that we offered was hope. When you think there are no more answers, no more solutions, no more other paths to turn down to make things better for yourself, if somebody can offer you hope, it's amazing and it's powerful and it puts you in a whole different place. And that's what I saw in this little boy's face. You know, he was like, you know, he's right. I played football today. I made a touchdown today with all these other guys. Plus that, remember in the very beginning when we started the show, I told the story of the mom who was struggling so much with her daughter because the mean girls were, like, really harassing her. She tried to take her out of the school and all different kinds of things happened. And what she ended up doing was calling her friends. The mom called her friends, introduced her daughter to her friends' daughters, and established a group of these young girls who all, despite what was going on in the schools, they were all going to different schools, and they became just a group of girls that had each other no matter what else was going on in their everyday life. And it saved her daughter because now she knew no matter what was going on during school that she had this group of friends that cared about her unconditionally, that she knew she was going to see tomorrow or the next day or whenever the time was set up for them to be together. And now that they're adults, they do things to help other kids as a group. And I loved that story. I've never forgotten that story. And what they did was, you know, they strengthened each other because now they had friends.
Right. Anytime you let someone know, whether it's in a child or an adult, or somebody that just went through something, anytime you let a person know that they're not alone, that they have like-minded people, you know, like this little girl saying that there were other, you know, girls that you know, felt the same she did, that could like her and they would have similar interests, that's very powerful. You know, like I said, with the little kid who was gangly, and then he sees all these famous people that were gangly at one. Now he's got, he has a sense of belonging, you know, like, okay, well, I'm gangly now, but look at all these guys now that are handsome when they're grown, or athletes when they're grown, and they look just like me when they were my age. So now it's not, they're not isolated. It's not like they're alone, like, oh, what's wrong with me? Why isn't my body growing right? No, everybody that's your age is like that. You know, maybe some of your schoolmates are maturing a little faster and they're not gangly anymore, but look at all these other people that grew up and were there, you know. So as soon as they realize that they're not alone, that it's normal, that hundreds or thousands of other people have gone through the same thing, you know, also with accidents and injuries, you know. What about children or adults that are injured? And then they meet somebody else that has that same injury and recovered and just picked themselves up and went on with life and were happy and vibrant and successful, you know. I mean, some injuries cause us to lose a limb or to become partially crippled or something like that. And you see some people will just, you know, disintegrate because of that and become miserable, and other people rise above it, and they're just happy to still be alive. You know, so if you have somebody and you can follow people that inspire you to do better, whether you're a child or an adult, it lets you know you're not alone, that you're not the only person this ever happened to, you're not the only person that ever went through this or that looks like this or that feels like this. And the minute you realize there's other people that have gone through that same thing and they're okay and they're happy, it inspires you that, okay, I can get through this. I'm going to be fine. So it really, really is important that whatever your child's issue is, find other people that have the exact same issue and are really good now. And let them see them as mentors. Let them follow them.
Well, and I agree with all of that. I do want to interrupt, though, Shell, because we're almost done with the show, and there was something absolutely horrific that took place this weekend, and it affected one of our friends and avid listeners, Donna Knight, who has talked on the show before, in where she's from. There is a group called Full Force, and they're kind of like a musical group, but they have a very large following and big family. And on the weekend, I believe it was either the 27th or the 28th of September, Pam Beck McFadden and her husband Tyrone McFadden lost in a car accident four children and a grandchild all at the same time. So I would like to have a moment of silence. I'm going to name out the names, and then for the rest of the show, we will just have silence in respect and a lot of sorrow for the loss that these people have endured.
90 seconds.
Michaela was 5. Tyrone Jr. was 11. Destiny was 23. Xavier was 18. And Jada Kiss was 14. Our hearts and our love and our sympathy and our empathy go out to this family. I cannot even imagine. So we'll be back tomorrow, but please say some prayers in your heart
60 seconds.
For the next full minute for this family and their loss. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. God bless.
Thanks, Reen. God bless everyone.